It's good to have you all here. As always, if we feed you, everybody comes. I like it. But glad you are here. Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. So the story is an ancient one. I mean, truly an ancient one. It's first recorded about 110, 120 AD. And even then, there are probably versions of it that existed before that. After the moments of Pentecost, all the disciples receive the gift to speak languages, and they decide, well, if we can speak all these different languages, we should go out and proclaim the gospel to the ends of the earth. Now, I'd like to believe that they said, well, who speaks Greek? Okay, well, you go to Greece. Who speaks Aramaic? When you're going to stick around here, who speaks Egyptian? Well, why don't you go to Egypt? But that's not how it went. All the records say the same thing. They cast lots to decide where they would convert the world. If you don't know what lots are, they pretty much put their names in a hat, and they said, who's going to India? And they pulled out a name and said, looks like Thomas, you're going to India. And Thomas, God bless him, the doubter, was not too impressed with the idea of going to India, of being the apostle to India. But as often happens when God calls you into service, you have a couple of ways to do it. God appeared to Thomas in a dream or two. Jesus showed up and said, Thomas, I really need you to go to India. And he said, I'm really not interested. Thank you, Lord, for the invite. I'm going to pass. And then God can lead with a feather or God can lead with a 2x4, right? So Thomas said, no, thank you. And a few days later, a guy showed up and said, the Lord has told me to go, Thomas. And so he grabbed him, threw him over his shoulder, and threw him on a boat. And off they went to India. There, Thomas did the work he was called to do. He preached and he teached the gospel. And evidently, as most of the apostles had to do, it wasn't like we are now with an established church. They had to find some money to actually eat. So he was a builder, a carpenter by trade, as we understand it for Thomas. And he was noted to be a skilled carpenter and builder. And he came to one province in India and met a king, I believe, named Gundapar. And Gundapar heard of his skill, saw the ability he had, and said, I would like for you to build me a wonderful palace. And Thomas said, I can do that for you. And so he hired him to do this, gave him an enormous sum of money, and said, I'll be back in about 9 or 12 months, and I look forward to seeing what you build for me. And so Gundapar goes to some foreign region to visit friends. It goes to do that excitement, have fun. Thomas, meanwhile, set to work building the temple, building this wonderful palace for the king. And 9 or 12 months pass. The king returns and says, I would look forward to seeing my palace. Where is it? Is it overlooking the sea? And Thomas said, no. He's like, is it here in the valley? He's like, no. He goes, well, where is it? He's like, you cannot see the palace. I have given all the money to the poor, and I have built you a wonderful palace in heaven. And Gundapar says, oh, you did. And he orders Thomas arrested, throws him into jail, and says, in the morning, you'll be flayed alive for wasting my money. I imagine Thomas had in mind the reading that we just heard, the gospel reading that he likely heard first person, right? Jesus saying, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The key is Thomas actually probably heard the whole story. For some reason in our gospel today, we took the saying apart from the actual parable. And there's the parable that it's not just a quick story that Jesus tells right before this that they cut inexplicably, where they ask Jesus about possessions, and he says, once there was a man who had tons of wealth. He was a very wealthy man indeed, and he had an even better harvest. And because he had so much harvest and he had more than he can carry in his barns, he ordered that the barns be torn down and bigger barns built so that he could have more money and more wealth and more possessions. But that night, the man is visited by the angel of death who says, you fool, this very night, your life has been asked of you, and your possessions will do you no good. And Jesus says, in that moment, not a whit of your life can be added with all that you have. A whit, by the way, is 18 inches. You can't even add 18 inches to your life with all of your possessions and all the wealth. In fact, possessions have nothing to do with it at all. It's in that context that he then says, sell what you have, give to the poor. If you have excess, share it. If you have money, give it away and help other people. Because at the end of the day, that money is not going to do you any good for anything. It's in that context that Jesus says, so where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. A saying that probably we need to hear today, to say the least. The study just came out this past Friday. I don't know if you saw it, but it listed the three most overworked cities in America. Number one was Houston. Number two was Atlanta. People who work hours and hours on end and focus on their job. So in so many ways, we could say Jesus' lesson, though in the first century, is easily talking to us in the 21st century. Our focus has to be somewhere different. I would argue that in many ways, as we are anxious about the world right now and all the things that are happening in it, shootings and anger and protests and frustration in a variety of ways, what we're really realizing once again is that we don't have control. We aren't in control. And none of our possessions, none of our wealth, as the wealthiest nation in the world, can ultimately protect us from chaos and fear, anger, and evil. It just doesn't. At the end of the day, we have to find someone we can rely on and trust in that is more. And it doesn't solve all those problems, but it's also where is our heart in this matter. So I had many jobs in my life. I've had lots of random jobs in the world. I've only been fired from one. I've told y'all about, I worked at the Memphis Jewish Community Center as a lifeguard for 8 years. I worked as a carpet cleaner, which my wife is still very glad I worked as a carpet cleaner. That's one of those extra jobs when you have two young boys. I know how to clean up the stains and get them out for good. But the one job that I was fired from was a job that I was completely unqualified for, and I still really don't know how the heck I got. I was a gymnastics coach. Yeah. I've never taken a gymnastics class in my life. Didn't have that ability. Don't know where it came from. I was at the JCC, and the coach said, we need some help. Could you come help us? And I said, sure. I don't know how to do that, but I can come help, I guess. She said, oh, it's super easy. All you need to do, we just need someone young. I was at that time, I was about, I don't know if I was 15 or 16. I was somewhere in that range. What we really need you to do is, if you've ever watched gymnastics, there's always that person sort of in the blue shirt standing by the apparatus, and their job is to catch someone who falls. That was my job. That was my gymnastics coaching. My job was to catch people. I was good at catching people. It turns out I was too good at catching people. You see, I was a 15 or a 16-year-old guy, and my job was to catch 12 and 13-year-old girls. And after about 3 months, the coach said, we have noticed a significant reduction of the girls' ability to stand or work on any of the apparatus when you were there. In fact, they always fall off right into your arms. It's an amazing thing. So you're fired. For the sake of this sermon, we'll talk about catching. That is, there are times in our lives when we just want someone to catch us. We want to know that there's someone there that offers us safety, that offers, well, something that is protecting us from the world or from other things. In so many ways, what Jesus is talking about in today's gospel lesson is putting our trust in someone who can catch us in the worst of situations. And sometimes that means that we've fallen, and other times that means that we just want to make sure that someone's there and we jump out anyway, hoping to be caught. The story of Thomas doesn't end in that prison. The story of Thomas goes something like this. Gondophar has decided to kill the apostle for wasting his money. And that night he has a dream. He is visited by his brother who had died about 2 or 3 weeks before. And in that dream, he asks his brother, how is it? How is the next life? And he says, it is wonderful, brother, and you have the most beautiful palace in all of heaven. And he said, I have what? He says, you have the most beautiful palace in all of heaven for all of the work that you did caring for others, which is all that matters. And Gundafar says, I didn't know this. And his brother says, can I buy your palace from you? And he says, absolutely not. I worked very hard on that palace. I will keep it. And he wakes up and he goes and he has Thomas released from prison and he is baptized that day and encourages the people of his region to be baptized as well. Now, it's easy to say that that's a apocryphal story, but it's actually recorded. It's 52 AD when he was baptized. And there are still the disciples of Thomas in India and that region called the Mar Thomae, who are still Christians some 2,000 years later because of the witness of Thomas, who showed that it was more important to care for each other than it was to hoard your wealth. It was more important to build castles in the sky than anything else. Or it was more important to show that relying on one another is the message of the gospel that we need to hear again and again. As we begin a new school year, as we celebrate all coming back together, I hope you can feel that warmth in this space. Feel that it is good when we are gathered together, when we are just happy to be with one another and share what we have. Because after all we ever have is today. All we ever have are the people next to us, and sharing with them is what's important. So my prayer this year, my friends, is just that we work on this side of our faith, of caring for the people right next to us, loving the ones that are right here nearby, and celebrating that we are not alone, that people will catch us even in the hardest of these situations, and we'll know God's love through those arms. Amen.